trends.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
To be as gods, you know,
catapult the propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed split-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
The prophet Daniel said there'd be a day when knowledge would increase, people would rush to and fro, and that day would indicate that we were close to the end of history. If we're not at that day, I don't know where we are. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. Our guests tonight, two men who think outside the box. Their analyses, wisdom, insight, valued for those reasons, but even more than that, I am honored to call these men friends. Gary Stearman, the host of Prophecy Watchers, longtime teacher of Bible prophecy, pastor, and again, out-of-the-box thinker. But we begin tonight with a gentleman who has an honorable career in the United States Army, active duty, expert on foreign policy, on the mess in the Middle East, and has turned his mind to analyzing where technology is going to lead the future of war. In fact, his forthcoming book, due very shortly from Defender Publishing, is called Future War. We begin our program tonight with Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis.
Technology is reshaping the world in which we live, even reshaping what it means to be human. It's certainly going to reshape the future of warfare. And in fact, there may be some overlap between the future of war and the future of humanity. Our guest is an expert in national security and foreign affairs. He's a broadcast analyst for radio and television outlets, frequent guest on Fox News and CNN. He's the author of a number of books, including Deadly Consequences, How Cowards Are Pushing Women into Combat, Never Submit, Will the Extermination of Christians Get Worse Before It Gets Better, and the future, the forthcoming book, Future War, Super Soldiers, Terminators, Cyberspace, and the National Security Strategy for 21st Century Combat, Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis. Bob, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you, Derek.
These are interesting days in which we live. Technology has always played an important part in the military. Many technological advances we benefit from every single day in civilian life were developed for military use originally. But you appear to be looking a little deeper into how things are going to change and perhaps even change the soldiers themselves.
Well, in fact, we face a revolution of sorts of technology. I think the 21st century, for instance, will be defined by space, weaponization of space. I believe the whole transhumanist movement is going to influence the types of things that we do with and through soldiers. We're going to put exoskeletons on soldiers. We're going to give them special equipment for climbing up walls. We're going to put brain implants that are going to, you know, allow them to quickly communicate with others, with robots, and also to relieve pain if they're wounded. So there's a host of things. Now, I am concerned that if you look at the history of the armed forces, both in the United States, Russia, China, North Korea, Vietnam, that you saw a lot of Frankenstein-like experiments, and some of which were perpetrated by the U.S. Armed Forces or by our own Central Intelligence Agency. So there's some bad stuff out there. But a lot of countries are moving in this direction because we want more efficient killing machines. And so soldiers are like that. But, you know, so you add the transhumanist piece, the super soldiers, you have the space issues, you have the cyber issues, you have the very sophisticated and smaller and hard to detect weapons of mass destruction are coming along, and then of course terrorism with the advances in technology. You know, individual terrorists or small groups of terrorists have their hands or will have their hands on very sophisticated pieces of technology that are going to be incredibly destructive and killing. So you have all of that amidst a transforming world where there's fragmentation, there is a dispersion of power centers, a very, very frightening future.
Hmm. It almost sounds like the 21st century update of Pandora's box.
Well, it is. You know, certainly in future war, I go through the transformation of the world in which we live. I show the mega trends, the shifts, the major changes, certainly the black swans, those unpredictable things that do inevitably happen that influence entire cultures. And then I look at the threats that I've just outlined, and then how all of that is fitted together in this new world order that we have. And I don't see a lot of synergy. I see a lot of conflict. And, you know, America's role is in question, I would argue. I do provide a fairly extensive explanation using five lenses as to what we ought to do, not only as an American Christian or nation, but as a Christian people, what ought to be done. Now, I do see some of these threats as prophetic signs, perhaps, of the end times. And so, you know, I'm not at the point that I would say that, you know, the end times and all of this is going to come to fruition at this date. I'm not there. But, wow, there's so much happening, and it's accelerating every day. It's very eye-opening and very frustrating.
Yeah, it, if I remember the figure correctly, one of the leading technologists, but most celebrated inventors of our era, Dr. Raymond Kurzweil, has said that in the next century we will experience something like 20,000 years worth of technological advancement, you know, based on the rate of change over the previous of mankind's history, and you couple that with the topic that you covered in your previous book, Never Submit, the spread of violent Islam, which is the correct term, radical Islam, you know, violent Islam is radical Islam. I should say is mainstream Islam is what I meant to say. But you make an interesting observation there. As we head into times that have been prophesied of the end, biblical prophecy, the rapid transformation of weapons systems and platforms will make the coming conflict or conflicts, the Psalm 83 war, if that is in fact a prophecy, the Gog-Magog conflict, and certainly Armageddon, almost unimaginable.
Well, it will be. You know, I envision that we'll have weapon systems on asteroids, that we'll have weapon systems on the moon. We'll, you know, just months ago, the Chinese launched a new rocket that had a satellite aboard, which is basically a dragon robot, which is supposed to reach out and, with its long arm and catch space junk. Well, it can also be very good at anti-satellite operations. You know, the Russians are rapidly expanding their weaponization of space. Now, this is all in part because we are so dependent upon our space infrastructure to do operations all over the world. And so given the race right now for control of the outer space and so forth, I don't see a lot of good coming from this. It's going to be far more dangerous. Technology will continue to explode on all of these fronts, and it very well may be pushing us right to what appears to be the end time.
The researchers involved in transhumanist research, especially those doing work on artificial intelligence, trying to develop a truly autonomous artificial superintelligence, acknowledge that there is an existential threat to humanity from their work. But a deputy defense secretary said last December that you know, the Chinese and the Russians are working on developing these technologies, what he called human enhancement technologies. Is there a way to put the cork back in this bottle, or is it? Are we basically finding ourselves compelled to pursue this research because if we don't do it, the Russians and the Chinese will get there first?
Yeah, Deputy Secretary Bob Work.
Yes, yes.
And Bob is actually a neighbor of mine. He is very aggressive on this front. He is right. The Chinese and the Russians, from what we can tell, are seeking enhancements. So is DARPA. Mm-hmm. We're seeking enhancements. But the enhancements go well beyond, you know, what we've seen in the past. You know, they want to create, you know, the super soldiers, the super human beings that are going to do things that, you know, years ago we never would have dreamed of, even in the Star Treks or, these high sci-fi types of programs. So there are things coming down the line, most of which, interestingly, based upon the fact that DARPA is mostly secret, and we see that every cutting-edge technology has apparently a military application. You know, just like the military decades ago, it wasn't Al Gore, but it was the military through RAND Corporation that invented the internet.
Right.
It was GPS was invented by DARPA, a contract. You know, a lot of very good science comes out of DARPA. But DARPA's purpose is not to help science in general, but to provide better killing mechanisms and better equipment for the military. And that's what they're doing. And they are doing a bang-up job. Now, I'd argue that the ethics, the morality of some of this work, that is really in question. I know in Future War I deal with that. There's some researchers out in California that wrote an entire book just on that very narrow area. There are serious issues with regard to the Geneva Convention, you know, because the human being itself can become a weapon that violates the Geneva Protocols. Now, I mean, there are so many pieces to this that a lot of people have never considered this. They could be considered as a biological weapon themselves, because if you're a Spider-Man or Superman type capabilities, you know, and you employ this super soldier in a combat scenario, they're going to destroy a lot of the enemy because they have all these super capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
This is no longer sci-fi. This is real stuff being worked on, and you know, it's being worked on by our enemies as well.
Hmm. You mentioned that in the book, Future War, you talk about things that we as Americans should do, our nation and we as American Christians should support. What are some of those things?
Well, I go through five chapters, five lenses, a security lens. I outline, you know, the type of national defense that we need. You know, I want a defense that is a respecter of biblical principle in terms of social agendas, in terms of religious respect, and of course that goes into having the right types of arms and the right types of doctrine that defend our nation. I address certainly our foreign policy. I want our foreign policy to support the values of America. I want it to protect religious freedom. I want it to protect the right to life. There are a host of issues there. I certainly want, in our intelligence community, I want us to have the eyes and the ears to pick up on the satellite threats, the cyber threats. Certainly, you know, on the human intelligence, I want to know what the enemy is thinking about us. So we have to have a well-integrated, sophisticated, capable intelligence system that, at the same time, does not impugn our personal, space, that doesn't spy on the American people, and so forth. And then I talk about the culture and then the economics. I try to address, economically, we need to unleash our economy to prosper. We need, if we're going to trade with a country, that country better not impose tariffs on our goods if we're not doing that to them.
Right.
And, of course, we need to rid ourselves of, you know, the debt. We need to make sure we have a fair tax system. And then the culture is in the cesspool. We need leadership at the top. People that appreciate the importance of family structure and don't try to rob from the local, the parents, the right to raise their own children as they see fit. These are all, you know, I think, principled Christian views that I believe government could adopt. And I'm hoping that Christians will embrace a Christian worldview,
mm-hmm.
and insist that our country can come back, can turn the corner and recover what I believe was a better time in America.
Hmm. It's an interesting time to be alive, but the times ahead aren't necessarily going to be pleasant.
No, they won't be.
Hmm. Colonel Bob McGinnis is one of the speakers here at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. His book, Future War, Super Soldiers, Terminators, Cyberspace, and the National Security Strategy for 21st Century Combat, to be released later this year. From the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, I'm Derek Gilbert. Our guest here in the interview room at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference is a man whose ministry has really culminated in this gathering here today in Colorado Springs. He's the author of a book that's become a classic already, Time Travelers of the Bible, a man I respect, conservative theologically, and yet an out-of-the-box thinker, Gary Stearman. Gary, welcome.
It's very good to be here, Derek.
It is quite a gathering. I sense just an energy among the people here that seems even higher, if anything, than the last time we were all together.
And that's not your opinion only. I've heard a lot of people express that, including people who have driven here and so forth. They've sensed the high energy level, the excitement level, and we're excited because we have brought together a group of people unlike any we've ever brought together before, from archaeology to commentary to political observation. Every aspect of Bible prophecy, we've got it covered.
No, absolutely. I mean, from experts in what the Egyptians were doing 3,500 years ago to my wife who's talking about what the technologists and the transhumanists are trying to do with computer technology, humanity of the future. Your talks, you've got a couple of topics that viewers will see on the DVD set here. One that we've talked about in the past, about your experience in the skies over Texas. Mm-hmm. So let's just touch on that for a moment. What was it that you encountered, and why was it so unusual?
And the very fact that you're asking that question, it always causes me to stiffen up a little, because for over 40 years I kept that story under my hat. Because to say that you saw a UFO was to declare yourself a nut.
Mm-hmm.
But to say that you flew along beside one for a considerable period of time, you're out of the ballpark. So I kept it a secret. A couple of years ago, the Lord just said, well, actually it's more than a couple of years, about 6 years ago, the Lord said, it's time to release this story. And I wrote it, published it, and at first it didn't really cause any eyebrows to raise at all. I thought, well, I got away with that one. They're not going to call me crazy. And then, little by little, as the story became known, that people wanted me to explain what happened. And long story short, I was flying an airplane that had a load of cargo, and it had an electrical failure. And this thing showed up, and I believe that it was an angel. There's no doubt about it. And it flew along beside me, and it took me to the airport without any kind of a further failure. I had had an electrical failure, and this thing showed up beside me and escorted me all the way to the airport.
What would normally have been the case when an electrical failure of that type manifested? What would you have expected?
Well, anything. I mean, it could have burned out circuitry, it could have started a fire, a number of things could have happened. And
catastrophic failure, in other words, of the whole airplane.
Yeah. And I was beginning to experience some strange symptoms. And this thing showed up alongside me and flew me all the way to Lubbock, Texas, where I landed at the Lubbock, Texas airport. And it waited until I landed. And I looked, after I rolled off the runway, I looked back and in the sky, and there it was. And when I went into the building, it disappeared.
Hmm.
It decided, okay, I've been around long enough. But essentially what happened was that I was escorted, if you will, by an angel. Now, this story is much longer. I'm having to abbreviate it, but several factory mechanics looked at this airplane. Because of the way the things failed, they wanted to make sure that this wasn't as symptomatic of the aircraft systems in general. And when they looked inside, they found a couple of failures that were impossible. There are V-belts on the back of an aircraft engine, and the V-belts are braced. You know, you establish tension, the V-belt can't come off. Well, the perfectly brand new, good, wonderful, non-scarred V-belts were lying on the bottom of the cowling as if they had been removed, except that the pulley distances had never been changed. They were still locked in the original position, which means the belt could never have come off.
Hmm.
It did. And so I had to answer a lot of questions. What did you experience? Well, I had quickly learned after I landed that you just don't go around saying, well, I encountered a UFO, because people laugh.
Yeah.
So I said, well, all I know is that every light on the panel lit up and then went out, and I had a massive electrical failure. Oh, well, what else happened? Well, that's it. I didn't tell anybody. I kept it a deep, dark secret. Now, the reason I'm talking about it now is because I do believe in principalities, powers, rulers of darkness in heavenly places. I think that Satan and his angels and God and his angels are a reality in the atmospheric heavens all around the earth. And I'm one of the few people, I think, privileged to have actually seen an angel in action, and I think it saved my life.
Hmm.
Secondarily, my career was in aviation and aviation management, and that was going to be my life. After that trip, I found myself spiritually awakened, and I began to study the Bible, and the rest is history.
Hmm.
It changed my career. I gave up aviation and became a Bible teacher. Because something told me that I had been saved by an angelic force.
I'm just glad it didn't take something that traumatic to get me off of the path I was on. That is remarkable. Your other talk, I want to touch on that for just a bit. The prophecy of the last generation sounds rather ominous. Is that a warning, or is this something of encouragement and hope?
Actually, I find it very encouraging, and the talk, which I've given here at the meeting, addresses six references in the Old Testament to the last generation. You know, we talk about the last generation, and Jesus talked about the last generation, and he said, this generation shall not pass until all these things be fulfilled, and Jesus repeatedly refers to what he calls this generation,
mm-hmm.
or the last generation. And everybody goes around saying, well, are we living in the last generation? Is there a way to find out? And if you look at the six occurrences of that phrase, and there are only six in the Old Testament, you look at all six of them and you discover that in serial order, they lay out the progress of Israel's return to the land in the latter days.
Hmm.
And so the terminal generation, in fact, in Hebrew, it's Hador Ha'akaron, Dor meaning generation, Akaron meaning terminal or last. And that phrase, the last generation, occurs only six times in the Old Testament, and each of the six times add a degree of information to the preceding ones, and they give you a perfect view of Israel's return to the land, and guess what? We're experiencing that today. It's very obvious that it's happening right in front of our eyes.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that Avi Lipkin points out that I find really interesting is that Israeli culture and government is moving toward the right, as our society here in the West is moving to the left. We are becoming more secular, more pagan, really, not secular, more anti-Christian.
Yes.
Whereas Jewish society seems to be moving more toward a place where they are openly calling for the construction of the Third Temple.
Absolutely.
So these are certainly remarkable times.
And that's exactly what this prophecy of the last generation does. It tells you precisely that. So we can see ourselves on a timeline if we know where to look and how to study.
Hmm.
As you say, our country, along with a lot of Europe, has gone secular, humanist, Marxist, whatever. And when God disappears, you've got to replace him with something,
mm-hmm.
and an inferior something, of course. And I think, and Avi Lipkin believes this too, that Brexit, for example, was a British rebellion against socialism. And sort of a last gasp, saying, look, we are Britannia. You know, for generations we ruled the waves, and
mm-hmm.
we're becoming nothing. Subverted not only just to a European-style socialism, but also the influx of thousands of people who do not even believe in the Western civilization.
Right.
And I think they've reacted to that, and they have said, we're out of here. We can't be a part of this anymore.
Mm. Now, Bill Salas has said, and this is fun because you and I both get to talk to many of these prophecy scholars,
yeah.
and then we try to synthesize what they bring to the table into a cohesive picture. I talked with Bill Salas after an article he posted to his website about the impact of Brexit on Bible prophecy, whether it would forestall the creation of the revived Roman Empire from which the Antichrist would emerge.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes a good point, and sadly, I think the event in Nice, France last night, as we record this on the 15th of July,
may prove him right, that there are any number of black swan events. Reported coup that is apparently underway in Turkey, as we record this, could be another one. That there are a number of events that could push the world, push Europe, into calling for greater government control for their own safety, security, or economic stability.
And what I believe about this is that if you ignore God long enough, he begins to take action. He's never satisfied just to let man muck things up completely. And he begins interposing himself into world affairs in visible ways. And I think the Lord is saying, okay, you've ignored me, you've left me behind, you've taken prayer out of public schools, you've taken me out of government, and now it's time for me to go to work. And he's going to work in judgment. Sadly, instead of blessing. And I really, really believe we're beginning to see the judgments of God around the world.
One of the things I have appreciated about your work over the years is that you were always reminding us that there is encouragement, that there is a light at the end of this tunnel, as it were. Share that with us.
Well, it's interesting to me the way God acts. He acts in an entirely non-human way. First of all, he is love. As John says, God is love. And in 1 John, you find that little three-letter sentence, three-word sentence, twice. God is love. And a long time ago, I noticed that, and I thought, if a person is love, quote-unquote, what are they? Because I've never known a person like that. Most human beings I know are not love. They're complicated. They have serious defects, including myself, because we're laden with sin. And yet God is love, as John said. And so I started thinking about that. And in order to understand how God acts, you have to understand how true love acts. And the way you understand that is by studying the Bible. Because you certainly won't find out about true love by studying human history. And so, to answer your question in a circuitous manner, I think we're seeing the love of God in action today. He's saying, you people want to destroy yourselves. I'm going to interpose my presence, and I'm going to save you from yourself, whether you like it or not.
That's, I think, the best outcome we can pray for.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, you see why I enjoy doing these interviews at the conferences, because I get to talk with people a lot smarter than me, and it's always an encouragement. Gary Stearman, of course, the host of Prophecy Watchers. You'll find the website at prophecywatchers.com. He's also the editor-in-chief of Prophecy Watchers magazine and the host of the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. Gary, it is an honor.
Thank you, Derek.
And we thank you for watching. I'm Derek Gilbert.
You find the show notes at vftb.net, and also look at the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. If you're watching this in video, check the notes below for a link to prophecywatchers.com. We'll also, in the next few weeks at skywatchtv.com, have information on how to get a copy of Colonel McGinnis's new book, Future Wars, which will be available in October from Defender Publishing. I've got my review copy. Need to read it quick, because Colonel McGinnis will, in fact, be in the Ozarks to record some television programs for Skywatch TV and other programs this Friday. So those will air in October, and we will be offering that book through the Skywatch TV store, skywatchtvstore.com. Very interested to hear what a gentleman of Colonel McGinnis's experience, which is ongoing as he is serving still as a consultant inside the Pentagon. Very interested to hear what he has to say about the future of war fighting in our 21st century world. In the news this week, one of the big stories, of course, over the last few days was the release last Friday of notes by the FBI on the investigation into Hillary Clinton's use of her private email server to handle confidential and classified documents while she was Secretary of State. The notes were heavily redacted, but even with the redactions, what you could read made it pretty clear that she violated the law in terms of the way she handled classified information. We're supposed to believe that she required 8 mobile devices during her 4 years as Secretary of State. Look, I've had this for 18 months, and I will probably keep this phone until it dies. And prior to this, I had an iPhone that lasted 3 years, and I only had to give it up because it belongs to my former employer. Now, what we don't know is what happened to these mobile devices, these BlackBerries that she was going through at such a, every 6 months. Did she lose them? And if so, what was on them? Where did they end up? Was she breaking them? Why was she? Well, it is incredulous to believe that she needed that many mobile devices. If she has such trouble keeping track of devices on which she is conducting confidential and classified business for the United States government, why should she be trusted as the President of the United States? Well, the other thing that is difficult to believe is that she didn't understand what the C in parentheses stood for on the emails that she was receiving. That indicates confidential information in a particular paragraph. She told the FBI that she thought it meant it was supposed to be alphabetized under the letter C. Now, that is clearly untrue. She is the originating official inside the U.S. government within that department, or she was while she was Secretary of State, for information that was deemed confidential or classified. She knew what the C meant. So my first thought when this news came out on Friday, and of course it was released on Friday before a long weekend, was how in the world did the FBI not recommend prosecution? And is FBI Director James Comey complicit in what is clearly a whitewashing of Hillary's record? There is no one, except maybe for Barack Obama himself, in the United States who would not have been prosecuted for what Hillary Clinton clearly did. But then when I thought about it a little more, and I know there are a lot of people who think that FBI Director Comey is complicit, that he's gutless because he didn't recommend prosecution, they are objecting to the release of this information on a Friday before a long weekend, rather than on a Monday, so that the entire week's news cycles could be devoted to the story. But when I thought about it a little more, here's my take on this. I think FBI Director Comey is playing a pretty shrewd political game with the cards that he has in his hand. He knew, as you and I do, that there is no way the Justice Department of Barack Obama would bring a case that would stick against Hillary Clinton. It wouldn't happen. That would allow Hillary to claim vindication. I've been cleared by the courts. I did nothing wrong. And that's exactly what would have happened. If they had recommended prosecution, the Justice Department would have found a way to frame the case in such a way that she couldn't be convicted, or they would find a way or find a judge who would guarantee that she wouldn't be convicted, which again would allow her to claim victory. I've been cleared by the courts, vindicated. All of this is just a vast right-wing conspiracy. So by putting this before the court of public opinion, Director Comey is leaving it to you and me to decide whether or not Hillary Clinton is guilty of mishandling state secrets, confidential information, classified information, which of course she is. Using her own private server to handle classified information is a violation of law. She knew better. Claiming that she didn't remember, didn't recall, throwing her subordinates under the bus, I only did what my staff told me, is a lie. Trying to throw Colin Powell, the former Secretary of State, under the bus, was a lie. But we're getting the opportunity now to do the one thing to Hillary Clinton that would really cause her pain, which is choose the other candidate in the November election. Now, why put it out there just before a three-day weekend? He put it out early in the day, you'll notice. The FBI released the notes early enough in the day that it dominated the news cycle on Friday. And even though it was a long weekend and many of us had the opportunity to forget about it as we were doing whatever we did over the Labor Day weekend, it did dominate the talk cycles on the Sunday morning talk programs. It also did not allow the Hillary campaign to frame any kind of response. In fact, you know, I watch the news pretty closely. I have not seen a response to this from Hillary's campaign yet. So my thinking is this is the only thing that Comey could do that would actually do some damage to Hillary Clinton, the candidate. Yes, he's taking a lot of flack in the public eye, but he ain't running for president. So I think, and maybe I'm being too gracious to Director Comey, but I think this is his way of making sure that she suffers some kind of penalty, trying to keep her out of the White House. And if you look at the way the polls have shifted over the last week, it's working. The most recent Reuters poll shows Donald Trump with a 1-point lead over Hillary. She was up 12 points just a week ago. Now, I know there are a lot of people who have issues with Mr. Trump, and I get that. I get that. But we know what we would get with Hillary Clinton. The issue of her health is getting more difficult for the mainstream media to ignore. She had on Labor Day Monday, she had a rally in Cleveland, Ohio, which she opened with a 4-minute coughing fit. I mean, this cough jag lasted a full 4 minutes. She was barely able to speak. Mainstream media tried to cover it up by blaming a high pollen count. Of course, people went back and checked and found the pollen count in Northeast Ohio was moderate, was not exceptionally high. So allergies were not the reason. On her plane later, another coughing fit interrupted a little stump speech. She was trying to once again make the case that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin have a bromance going on, which would be bad for the United States. I think the reason she's playing that card, by the way, is because the neocons are telling her to. Fred Reed, retired journalist who still writes a weekly column that he posts at his website, fredoneverything.org. Fredoneverything.org. Worth reading. It's entertaining. He's a good writer. Still has the chops, said in military circles, there are three levels of stupid. There is stupid. There is really, really, really stupid. And then there is going to war with Russia. And it's not that the U.S. military doesn't have the capabilities to inflict a lot of damage on Russia. We do. There's no question about it. But there is nothing to be gained by going to war with Russia. I mean, you and me, the average citizens of the United States, gain nothing through a war with Russia. The only people who gain are the ones who make equipment for the military. Boeing, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Raytheon, they benefit. You and me, we gain nothing. And that is why so many of the prominent neocons have left the Republican Party to support Hillary Clinton, because Trump is actually talking about talking with Vladimir Putin. I mean, we do share one particularly pressing interest, the United States and Russia, and that is violent Islam. Russia has an Islamic problem in a number of its republics, like Chechnya. So we might gain something by cooperating with them. We certainly gain nothing by going to war with them. But the neocons have been pushing this war, pushing to expand NATO right up to the borders of Russia. That's why this whole mess has been simmering in Ukraine for the last 2 years. That's why there was that war with Russia and Georgia a few years back. Our media still reports it as an invasion of Georgia by Russia, which if you actually read what happened, that's not the case. Georgia sent troops into its breakaway republic of South Ossetia, killed about 160 civilians and about 20 or 30 Russian soldiers, and then Russia responded. That's what happened. I'm not saying Vladimir Putin's a good guy. I'm not saying that Russia is the good guy in all of this. I'm just saying that, well, think about it this way. Do you really want to send your children or grandchildren to war with Russia over Estonia, Latvia? Nothing against the people in the Baltics, but really? I think we have more to gain by trying to cooperate with the Russians than pushing a war. And Hillary, through her time as Secretary of State, has shown that she is a hawk. Hillary, you can lay at her door the mess in Libya, the failed state there. The millions of people who have fled Syria. It is more of the same if she wins in November. Again, I'm not giving Donald Trump any credit for being a role model as a Christian man. I'm just looking at what we know of Mrs. Clinton, what we know of Mr. Trump. And I don't think we need four more years of Barack Obama's foreign policy. Questioning Hillary's health, by the way, becoming a dangerous for those who do it, at least career-wise. Dr. Drew Pinsky, who's had a television show on a couple of networks, most recently HLN for the last few years, expressed concerns about her health and was fired by HLN about a week later. And a contributor to the Huffington Post, who wrote an article about Hillary's health, summarily fired and the article deleted from the website within a matter of hours. So the news department of NBC, not MSNBC, but NBC, the network, just made mention of her coughing fit at the beginning of her conference or beginning of her rally in Cleveland on Monday. And almost immediately, the DNC and Hillary's campaign were tweeting angry responses to NBC about their shoddy journalistic practices for, and they weren't speculating. They didn't raise any questions about, is she healthy enough to run? They just mentioned, well, she suffered the worst coughing fit we've seen on the campaign. Yeah. Methinks they doth protest too much. I think there is an issue, a serious issue, that is worth examining regarding her health. This persistent cough does not bode well for somebody being able to fulfill her term in office. The Triumphal Arch from Palmyra, Syria, is coming to New York City. This is not the gateway to the Temple of Baal. You remember back in the spring, back in April, there was some concern that the gateway to the Temple of Baal was going to be erected, or a replica of it, in New York City. Turned out it was not. And the one that was supposed to be erected in London turned out to be the gate, not the the gateway to the temple, but the Triumphal Arch, which was built a couple centuries after the Temple of Baal in Palmyra. It was connected by the Grand Colonnade in Palmyra to the Temple of Baal. So it was connected in a sense, but not the gateway to the temple itself. Anyway, this 2/3 scale replica will be erected in New York City on September 19th. Now, interestingly, the replica went up in Trafalgar Square in London on April 19th. So what is it about the 19th of the month? Maybe nothing, maybe coincidence. I don't know. Just thought that was kind of odd. Speaking of temples, evidence of the Temple of Solomon has been discovered by the Temple Mount Sifting Project. This is the project that goes through debris that's been disposed of by the Muslim Waqf, that's the group that oversees the Temple Mount, after construction projects that they've done on the Temple Mount. They're digging up archaeological relics, artifacts, and then dumping them into a dump site outside Jerusalem. They don't have any interest in finding evidence that a temple, a Jewish temple, once stood on the Temple Mount, but there has been some evidence discovered, floor tiles that appear to be from the renovations and additions that Herod the Great added to the temple in the first century and the first century BC. So that has gone on display in Israel, kind of runs counter to the UNESCO resolution passed this year, designating the Temple Mount an exclusively Muslim holy site. And one final note, some more disturbing reports of creepy clowns. This has been ongoing for a couple of weeks now around Greenville, South Carolina. People reporting to police seeing somebody or a person or persons dressed as a clown trying to lure children into the woods. And then in Winston-Salem, Sunday night, it was in Winston-Salem, people called police to a neighborhood near a wooded area with the same report. Not sure if this is a trend or if this is just something where somebody's trying to propagate a meme. There was a report a few weeks back of a creepy clown wandering around Green Bay, Wisconsin. Turns out that was just an independent filmmaker trying to stir up a marketing campaign, a viral marketing campaign for a short film that he'd produced. But I don't think that's what's going on in Winston-Salem, South Carolina, or North Carolina, excuse me, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and Greenville, South Carolina. Police are still trying to find who's responsible and why they're doing it. Coming up in A View from the Bunker this weekend, we bring you the second interview regarding that disturbing documentary, Hard to Believe. Ken Stone was the director of the film. It's a one-hour documentary exposing the Chinese government's practice of live harvesting organs from prisoners of conscience. This is happening to perhaps as many as 100,000 political prisoners a year. Many of them are members of the Falun Gong sect. Some of them are Christians. Some of them are just agitators that the government finds a nuisance. They're locked up, and there are hotels now opening near prison camps to facilitate organ transfer tourism. Wealthy people from the West who travel to China to obtain a donor heart, kidney, liver, on demand. It is despicable. And the people who should know about it in government are not doing anything about it if they do know. And there's some evidence to suggest that they do know but don't want to raise the issue. You'll hear that interview Sunday evening on A View from the Bunker and also on the View from the Bunker YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. Next Wednesday evening, two more interviews from the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. Two people I see around here at the office most every day, Josh Peck and my best friend, Sharon K. Gilbert. Those interviews 1 week from tonight, September 14th. September 18th, Janet Phelan, who I hadn't talked to in 10 years, a very early interview guest on PID Radio and A View from the Bunker back in 2005, 2006. She is on the run, basically. She left the United States. When we talked, she was renting a small place in Uruguay. We'll find out what she's been researching, and she will explain why she believes the elites want you dead. That's September 18th. And then on the 21st of September, from the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, Jeff Kinley and WND.com publisher Joseph Farah, our guests on A View from the Bunker. Our Bible study, the Gilbert House Fellowship, every Sunday, two studies, one Old Testament, one New Testament, going through the Bible in chronological order. Sharon and I produce that and upload those by midday Sunday. You'll find the archives there at gilberthouse.org. The God Conspiracy, a supernatural thriller that I wrote about 10 years ago, turned out to be a little more prophetic than I thought it was going to be. I'm releasing it as an audiobook version here on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. Every Monday, a new episode. The first two are available now for download. You can also find that specific playlist if you just want to see and listen to those episodes without going through the YouTube channel. You'll find it at thegodconspiracy.tk. That's all one word, thegodconspiracy.tk. Skywatch TV is in the middle of a three-week run of interviews with Jonathan Kahn. He's got a brand new book out just released on September 6th called The Book of Mysteries. He describes the book, the format he chose to write it in, and shares some of the mysteries of the Bible that he discusses in the book. Complete schedule for Skywatch TV, channels and times, posted at skywatchtv.com. Just check the top menu bar where it says channels. And while you're listening, if you got a spare moment or two afterward, or even as you're listening, we appreciate you taking the time to leave a review for us at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you find us. The iTunes Store, of course, is what I'm talking about. It's where you find us in the podcast section there. We appreciate those of you taking the time to review us, and I am humbled and honored by the 4+ star rating. Thank you very much. You'll find us at Facebook as well. Our Facebook page there, facebook.com/viewfromthebunker. Give us a like and discuss the issues that we raise here on the program there at the Facebook page. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod. His website is incompetech.com. We do this because we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.